Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, October 18th, 2008. I'm Harley Schlanger. I will be your host. As we're beginning this program, French President Nicolas Sarkozy and European Commission President José Manuel Barroso are at Camp David meeting with President Bush to discuss the deepening economic crisis, which, if not reversed, will plunge the world into a new global dark age. In the last week, Sarkozy has begun using a term which, until recently, was almost exclusively used only by Lyndon LaRouche. That term is New Bretton Woods. It's not just Sarkozy who's discussing a New Bretton Woods, which is named after the original Bretton Woods, which was established as a monetary system under the leadership of U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt at the end of World War II. Roosevelt's Bretton Woods, which allowed the industrial nations to not only recover from the devastation of World War II, but included with it the promise of global prosperity, was dismantled, beginning with Richard Nixon's cowardly decision to bow down to the British in August 1971. The reversal of FDR's policy continued uninterrupted over the next 3.5 decades, replacing fair trade with free trade, eliminating regulations in favor of a deregulated economy, and turning the formerly so-called advanced nations into post-industrial rust buckets, while condemning several billion people in the Third World to miserable lives of poverty, hunger, and disease. Throughout this period, Lyndon LaRouche has not only diagnosed the sickness, the intellectual fraud behind globalization, but organized internationally for a new Bretton Woods policy. Now, as it's no longer possible to pretend that the economy is fundamentally sound, as Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson was saying as recently as 6 weeks ago, many of those who denied there was a crisis are now calling for a new Bretton Woods. On today's program, we will help you understand the difference between the phony new Bretton Woods, which is being put forward by British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, fascist speculator George Soros, and other swindlers and frontmen for the City of London, the difference between their so-called New Bretton Woods and that of Lyndon LaRouche, which has growing support around the world. While Brown, Soros, and others would establish international agencies which would allow the swindlers, like Soros, to stay in control, LaRouche's policy would take up the anti-colonial cause of Franklin Roosevelt and complete FDR's mission of ending, once and for all, the Anglo-Dutch Empire, or any empire for that matter. Joining us today on the program will be the leader of Lyndon LaRouche's movement in France, a former candidate for president of France, and one of the world's leading economists, Jacques Cheminade. Also with us today will be Paul Marino, who is part of a LaRouche youth movement group working on the American system of economics, revived by Lyndon LaRouche as the study of physical economy. So, Jacques, welcome to the LaRouche Show.
Yeah, welcome to you.
Well, Jacques is a leading international spokesman for Lyndon LaRouche's concept of a new Bretton Woods. Let's begin with your explanation of the key features of what LaRouche means when he says new Bretton Woods.
Well, he means bankruptcy reorganization. If you want to clean the mess, you have to eliminate the authors of the mess and the cause of the mess. So this means to throw away most of the derivatives, only keep a few who are linked to tangible good insurance operations, but get rid of most of them. And this is a tremendous amount. If you look at the figures that you can see is, as for December 2007, about 600,000 billion. And if you look, that's the outstanding, but if you look at the total, the yearly total, it's probably 4 quadrillions. It was 2 quadrillions in 2005. So this is known in France, and people are saying something should be done about it. We cannot go on like that, because all the money goes towards speculative operations, money making money, and this deprives the real economy, labor, long-term investment, infrastructure of what is needed for them. So what you have is all of a sudden, or not so much all of a sudden, Nicolas Sarkozy threw on the table the idea of a new Bretton Woods, first before the General Assembly of the United Nations, and then when he was in Toulon in France, where he gave a speech saying, which is very surprising, knowing from where Nicolas Sarkozy comes, Nicolas Sarkozy is a French president, where he said financial capitalism is finished, exotic and toxic operations, this is finished. We have to refound the international monetary and financial system. And recently, he expressed it even more clearly, saying we need a new capitalism based on values, and finance should be the entire service of the citizens and the productive economy and not the reverse. So Lyndon LaRouche denounced first these derivatives very, very early in the 1990s, and to be precise, in 1993, when there were only 600 billion, more or less, of derivatives. Now it jumped to quadrillions. So if Lyndon LaRouche had been followed in 1993, well, we won't have what we have today. It would have been taken care of in time. LaRouche at the time proposed a 0.1% tax on derivatives. Now it's not more possible to control the process. These derivatives have to be thrown away. And this means that the hedge funds who are in British Commonwealth, most of them are based on British Commonwealth possessions, these hyper-speculative funds, these funds have invested mostly in operations with derivatives, or also the famous CDOs. So this has to be stopped, and the tax havens have to be taken care of.
Jacques, let me just ask you now, because you've just laid out quite a bit, and I know our listeners want to know specifically about how much Sarkozy actually knows about this. So what you said is that the LaRouche New Bretton Woods would deal with the derivatives by going with bankruptcy reorganization and essentially causing them to be written down and disappear.
Exactly.
Because they're of no value. Does Sarkozy intend the same thing when he talks about New Bretton Woods?
And the hedge funds have to be stopped and also tax havens closed. But Sarkozy, well, there is something funny that he told George Bush apparently over the phone yesterday. If you don't organize a new Bretton Woods summit, you will quit naked, he told Bush.
Huh.
So he, pretty strong words. So apparently Nicolas Sarkozy has been convinced that his future in history is linked to this new Bretton Woods. So at this point, it's not very clear how far this will go. They are calling for a new legislative framework and regulation. Regulation and New Bretton Woods is the talk of the town in Paris and in France today.
And Jacques, also in Italy, where there's a debate that's going to take place in the Senate probably next week, where you have Senator
Petrolini.
You've got the Finance Minister Tremonti. From what you can see from Paris, what is the parallel, or what is in common between the Sarkozy proposal and the Tremonti proposal? Do they represent a European wide consensus?
It's difficult to say exactly, because this thing is in the process of discussion. But the fact that the head of the economic advisors to the prime minister was in a TV program with me, and it was accepted for the first time at that level with such an interlocutor, says a lot about the ideas that are tossed around. So it came in France under the form of an article on May 22nd on the Mad Finance Should Not Rule, with a lot of important, mainly socialist, representatives of the European thinking having signed that declaration. Then it was followed by discussions under the table, where I was more or less directly involved. And these discussions have evolved under what should be done. So what people around the prime minister and the president are saying, which is a bit what Tremonti is saying, they are saying there should be regulation, in part regulation and in part innovation. And what we are saying, what LaRouche is saying, what I'm saying, is that there should be an entirely new monetary and financial system absolutely linked and in the service of long-term investment. Sarkozy wants long-term investment, but he has not, I think at this point, he has not yet realized that it would mean a head-on fight against the British interests. He thinks that he can co-opt Gordon Brown into something, and that's a danger. There is a kind of arrangement between Europeans in a direction of something which is rather still unclear. Sarkozy, Tremonti, and probably the president of Germany are on the same line. Remember that even Angela Merkel called for the checking of hedge funds and measures against the derivatives. And Montefering attacked the financial locust in Germany. So you have French, German, Italian. It's again the Europe of the six, the old Europe, who is raising the question into the public scene. And the interest of this conference that Sarkozy is calling for the third week of November in New York, the importance of this conference is that all the problems would be on the table. That Sarkozy would come clearly from bankruptcy reorganization, probably not. But maybe yes, because things go tremendously fast. It's an acceleration of history. What LaRouche has seen as the evolution of this period in a more and more accelerated way is now before our very noses.
And
it's happening.
The collapse of the system has been breathtaking. What's happened in the last weeks.
It's finished.
Anyone who said maybe the $700 billion can contain it, maybe $2.4 trillion, even a bad guy like Draghi from the Bank of Italy today said $2.4 trillion is not enough money. Jacques, let me go to a couple of these specific...
Look at something. I was in Switzerland last week, and this week the Union de Banque Suisse, which is the main bank of Switzerland, the symbol of Switzerland, the Swiss state has to come in and pay for $60 billion of toxic effects of that bank and reinforce the equity, the capital, with $3.6 billion. So we are at the end of the end. It's finished.
Yeah. Now, I want to go through a couple of the specific points that Lyndon LaRouche has specified for his version of a new Bretton Woods, and I'd like you to make some comments on them. Because I think initially on this program, what I really want to do is to get our listeners to understand the difference, because they're going to have to play a role in making sure that we get the right kind of system, because we don't really have much of an opportunity to tinker around with it. We need something in place now. By the way, we will take some questions. If you want to send emails in, questions for Jacques Cheminade, send them to radio@larouchepub.com.
The key is bankruptcy reorganization.
Okay, now bankruptcy reorganization, but one of the things Lynn said yesterday is the principle of Westphalia and national sovereignty.
Uh-huh.
Why is that important?
Because it's cultural. What I said, the New Bretton Woods is an issue of civilization. It's not a trick, it's not an arrangement between diplomats or technocrats. The issue is civilization, and the principle of the Peace of Westphalia is not only the advantage of the other, but to create the economic, social conditions so that the advantage of the other is enforced or allowed in society. So for that, you have to create a different culture, a culture of common development, a culture of a community of purpose, and a culture where the British conceptions of the war of all against all are forever eliminated. And the principle of cooperative developments between associated sovereign republics is what defines the future. And LaRouche says that only if this happens from the United States with Russia, China, and India, the thing could be accomplished, because we need the power, such powers as four powers, to enforce it. France, and also, in a certain extent, Italy, have played a role of a catalyzer in that, which is interesting. It's a small thing in a reaction which accelerates a reaction.
Now, Jacques, in this discussion also of the question of sovereignty. Of course, Gordon Brown seems to be trying to save the globalized system of the empire. What role do fixed exchange rates play? Because this is another point LaRouche has made tied to the question of derivatives and speculation.
Yeah, if there are if the exchange rates change all the time, it allows for all kinds of speculations. So the fixed exchange rates are necessary to put a stop to all the speculative operations. And in the short run, what LaRouche said is that what's needed for the United States is a higher interest rates to defend the currency, because if not, the dollar would go down in an incredible way, and a low interest rate of the order of 2% for long-term investment. So to separate the two things, this idea of a two-tier interest rate is already making inroads in France, I must say.
Well, that's interesting.
People are talking about it. Well, it was like that before the rules of the European Union and before the system, the liberal system. In the late 60s and early 70s, there was something called, it was in the agricultural field but also in the industrial field, a bonification of credit, which meant that the banks would give a credit at a certain level and the state would intervene with subsidies to lower the level for certain type of projects. Now this is forbidden by the European Union. It's banned. So we have to change that.
Now, you mentioned, really, in talking about the principle of Westphalia, the other point that Lynn has insisted upon, which is that the purpose of this is not to straighten out the overhang of debt, but to, in other words, what they're doing now, pumping money into the banks to back up the bad debt. Instead, Lynn said there must be new credit at low interest for large infrastructure. And is this what you mean when you talk about a culture of common development?
Yeah, sure. You can't bring back to life a dead corpse, even with electric shocks. What you can do is to bring more and more rot in the environment and kill people. At this point, if this thing were to go on, if this system were to go on, it won't work. It would bring chaos. And chaos can only be controlled by police state measures and military measures. And I noticed that President Bush has called back certain units from Iraq to be grounded in the United States in case of riots or crowd motion against these measures, against the banks and against the insurance companies and against the oligarchy. So this is extremely dangerous, and I think what LaRouche means by a Westphalia Treaty approach is to shift a French Revolution type of situation where you can manipulate the crowds into a true American Revolution type of situation where you have a culture of the common good and the common development and the respect of what the American Constitution says, which is the general welfare and the future generations.
Jacques, you were on a very prominent television program in France. It was English language. And it's posted on our website, LaRouchePact.com, and I'd like to encourage our listeners to go on there and see the 20-minute exchange that you have with this prominent official from, I believe he's now the economic advisor to Prime Minister Fillon. But yes, one of the points that you made on this, which I think is another important one to emphasize, you... actually, there are two points I want to bring up on this and have you comment on. But the first one is where you mentioned that you have a choice of triaging the debt or triaging the population. Now, what did you mean by that?
Well, the debt has to be nullified. Most of this debt is not linked to anything real. It's the result of policies of looting and cheating. It's the London and lies. So this has to be stopped. It should be eliminated from the books. And no way that it can be paid back. And then the people could benefit from investments of new money issued under the American system, which means that the American president should ask the House of Representatives, the consent to issue long-term money for long-term investment so that you can have the type of development that happened under Roosevelt and in a certain way for the reconstruction of Europe under the Marshall Plan, the good side of the Marshall Plan. So you, if you go in that direction, you can reestablish in a relatively short period of time, probably with difficulties, but in a relatively short period of time, the commitment to go towards the future, the commitment to think in terms of the future generations, in terms of your children and grandchildren, and not in terms of the present, of the immediate benefit, of immediate gain, and of a sort of criminal hedonism, I would say, of the pleasure of possession. This is what has to be thrown away.
Well, you made the other point from the interview, which I thought was most interesting, is this idea that Alan Greenspan, or should I say Sir Alan Greenspan, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank in the United States, was brought in as an advisor to Gordon Brown on Brown's proposal for a new Bretton Woods. And you made the point that it's crazy to take the criminals and the swindlers who set up this system and ran the world economy into the ground to now be brought in as the ones to save it.
Yeah, and you have Henry Paulson, who between two visits to his spiders and his snakes, he appointed Noel Kashkari to head from Goldman Sachs, and they are all from Goldman Sachs. That's why I said no Sachs next night. I made that pun. It was appointed to rule over the $700 billion Paulson Fund. So this is insane. It's all these Goldman Sachs people directly linked to the British. And Goldman Sachs, look at it. They were the ones who continued selling subprimes to their customers while they themselves were betting for a collapse of the market. So it's crazy to think that these people are ruling the system, and together with the British, together with a British view of the world. And in France, we have the same. Michel Condessus, the former French head of the International Monetary Fund, has been appointed to the new institution which is in charge of supporting the economy and, in fact, supporting the banking system. So there is this element of contradiction and insanity. For example, at the European level, the 27 European heads of state supported Sarkozy for a new Bretton Woods. But at the same time, they refused to endorse a plan to relaunch the economy, the physical aspect of economy, in the waiting of the new Bretton Woods. So we are I would describe it as a, from an entomology standpoint. If you look at what's happening in Europe, it's like a larva moving towards a superior state of the life of life, but it's not yet in the superior state of life. So have this larva moving around in a funny way, with the potential to become maybe a butterfly, but also to stay a larva. And what will happen in the United States is what will make the change.
Jacques, I had Helga Zepp LaRouche on 2 weeks ago on the LaRouche Show, and she made the point that it's becoming increasingly clear that the campaign that she waged in Germany and that you waged in France earlier this decade, where the two of you said the European Union must end, that is now becoming generally recognized. Do you think that's an increasing view in France now, that the EU has outlived its whatever purpose it may have had?
I don't think yet the EU, but certainly the Maastricht conditions, the conditionalities of Maastricht, and the Stability Pact. The people who are a bit advanced are saying that Stability Pact is finished forever. And those that are like the former finance minister, Edouard Balladur, who was an ultra-liberal, have to say that it's temporarily suspended. So the Stability Pact, which forbade productive investment and blocked the development of Europe, is thrown through the window. Now what has to come back is the sovereignty on currency, and that is not yet the case, that each state has to recover the sovereignty on its currency to have an independent policy and coordinate that independent policy for development with other countries. Now the European Central Bank is still there, Mr. Trichet is not saying much because he's a bit cornered, but the European Central Bank is still there. That's the difference with the United States. Well, immediately the president decides, with political will, there could be this issuance of currency for real economic development. In Europe, it's forbidden by the rules of the Maastricht Treaty and the European Central Bank. That's why we are blocked. So it's Sarkozy tries to turn the issue around to change and to shift things. But the question has to be confronted frontally. It cannot be a matter of diplomatic discussion.
And well, Jacques, wasn't it sort of a de facto end run around the European Union and the ECB when the Greek government and also the Irish government made guarantees, national guarantees to defend their banks? I mean, doesn't that...
And the German government, Angela Merkel in Paris said we would never do it.
Yeah.
And when she came back to Berlin, she saw the IPO...
The real estate
scandal, the real estate scandal of this bank,
yeah,
was not enough money. And she decided, well, we cover the deposits because if we don't do that, there will be a run out of the banks and it will be the end of the economy. So she had to do it. The thing that's clear now for all these heads of state, or the most reasonable of them, like the ones in Italy, France, and also Germany, is that if the states continue to guarantee the banks, the state would be without money to do it,
yeah,
and the sovereign and the illiquidity from the banks would reach the state, and the state would not be able to pay. So the state would be bankrupt, like Iceland. Iceland is only something in advance of what would happen to the others if they continue doing what they are doing.
So
Iceland is bankrupt.
This is an example of the ideology crashing on the rocks of reality.
Yes, exactly. This hits on the head people that otherwise would never have done what they probably would have to do now. Fear for them is a good advisor.
Now, Jacques, we have an email question for you from Greg, who asks,
yeah,
for your opinion of the problems with the continued bailouts. Will they be able to continue to pump trillions of dollars in, or is this pretty much a dead end now?
It's a dead end. It's finished. It's finished. They are faking that this works, but that Sarkozy knows very well. He may be opportunistic, but he's not stupid. He's far from being stupid. And he is now controlled by the institutions of the nation. In France, you have an approximation of institutions of the presidency. So he has two characters around him, Jean-David Levitt and Claude Guéant, and others who are orienting the presidency in a different direction. So Sarkozy, he knows that this new Bretton Woods conference has to take place as soon as possible. LaRouche said it's too late, and it is too late. The thing is collapsing now. The process of collapsing is going on. But Sarkozy said, well, I can't do it. Bush, it won't work with Bush. I have to do it after the American elections. So that's why it will happen in November, or the third week of November. Now the question is, who is going to be president of the United States, which is not so much a question, but who is going to control the presidency? And there, LaRouche has to be supported as a controlling factor of the orientation of the next presidency. If this doesn't happen, you have a disaster, and we are running towards a new dark age.
You're listening to Jacques Cheminade from Paris, who's joined us this evening for him in Paris to talk about the fight for a new Bretton Woods. This is the LaRouche Show. If you're listening and you want to make sure your friends get to hear it, the LaRouche Show is archived on larouchepub.com. That's LaRouchePub.com. And we have the archive of all the previous programs, and Jacques has been on with us before. Actually, you could go back and listen to him previously where he was warning of this collapse that's coming. Now, also, you can go to LaRouchePAC.com and see the debate, the very interesting debate that Jacques had on an English-language television program. This is out of Paris, isn't it, Jacques?
Yeah, it's out of Paris. It's a France 24. Is a thing that the French set to be a sort of counterpart to CNN.
Okay, so this has a domestic audience, but also an international audience.
Oh, no, it's mainly an international audience.
Because it's in English.
Yes.
Okay.
They have an English, I think, and I think the other, they have a English and another language, which I think it may be Russian.
And for you to be invited onto this program is a sign of the times that there are people in France who are very well aware that you've played a role over a long period of time as the representative for these policies. Is this...
I had never before such a treat in a public program. They send a cab to pick me up, a cab to bring me down, to bring me back. It was something funny.
And they never called you political extremist, Jacques Chaminade.
No, and well, this is they organize this program, obviously, to be aired in the United States in the wake of the Sarkozy visit and during the Sarkozy visit.
Okay, and it is up
the
on...
The French tend to do these kind of funny things.
Yeah. Well, it is up on the LaRouche PAC website, so everyone can go see this. Now, I'd like to bring in Paul Marino from the LaRouche Youth Movement. As I mentioned,
oh, good.
Paul has been doing some work on... Henry Carey and the American System. And Paul, did you have any questions to start with for Jacques?
Yeah, hi, Jacques. Sure.
Hi.
How are you?
All right.
Good. The shift in Sarkozy I've been finding very exciting and also unexpected. I wonder if you could develop for us the institutions in France that are, I guess, pushing him to do this type of activity.
But we shouldn't be over-optimistic. It will continue if we keep the pressure on him from France, from Germany, from Italy, but mainly from the United States. Sarkozy is very much linked to certain people in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, this has been described to me as what's called the Gaullist tradition. So I wonder if you could develop for some of our listeners what this is and where it comes from in France.
Well, France is the only country which has a president elected by the people, directly by the people in Europe. There is a kind of presidency. It has also a parliamentary system, and since 1973, it has lost its principle of national banking. We had that before 1973. The Bank of France would issue money, credit money, for the Treasury, and the Treasury would give that to certain banks or certain public institutions to invest in long-term ventures. This was stopped in January 1973 after the August 15, 1971 breakdown of the new Bretton Woods by Nixon. So, we have still the institutions of the presidency. So these institutions are in contradiction with the Brussels bureaucracy. So you have, when things are not very hot, there is this kind of compromise. But when things become very hot, like now, when the national interests are at stake, then there is a reaction in France. And all of a sudden, you have certain institutions that you thought before were dead or have disappeared, who emerge in a certain way. And it happens through, for example, the thing of the new Bretton Woods emerged through certain layers of the Socialist Party, then they were not able to pick it up, then it went into layers of the present right-wing government, and then Sarkozy picked it up. So it's funny the way it works, because it's like you play on various angles, and then it emerges suddenly, somehow where you did not expect it to emerge. That's a very interesting aspect. You have, in France, a school of public administration, where it was. So this thing is like a group of people that would have a good nose to smell the winds of politics. So in a normal situation, they would serve the banks and serve the international institutions. When they see there is a threat to their very existence in France, they would tend to go in a different direction. And all this is a kind of permanent institution. In France, you don't have a change every time there is a new president, a change of everything, a spoiled system. You have a sort of permanent administration. So this administration can be a very bad thing if it's not told how to act. If there is somebody with leadership and who can provide a leadership, all of a sudden this administration becomes something useful. So that we are in this sort of situation now.
And Paul, did you have a follow-up?
Sorry?
Did you have a follow-up question to that?
Oh, no, I think that's good. I was thinking about one of the questions LaRouche fielded during the webcast, and he alluded to some of these different factions in France. This is from the webcast, so this helps clarify what I think LaRouche was describing 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
For example, these people would do certain things, then stop doing them. Who knows? Let's see what comes. What will happen in Russia and the United States are the most important things at this point.
Well,
the French have a lot of connections with Russia. Remember that Fillon, after, and remember what Sarkozy did during the Georgia events, Sarkozy played a relatively useful role in this situation. He stopped the European Union to become a supporter of Georgia and Saakashvili. He intervened immediately. He flew to Moscow, and he managed to have a kind of arrangement which was, on the whole, positive. Then, after that, Fillon met Medvedev in Sochi, and they decided to have economic union between France and Russia. So these are strong words. And the French have always been connected for the best or for the not so much good to the Russians. There is also this French-Russian connection. And also you have the Sarkozy connection with the United States. So that's why I spoke about a catalyzing role, because it's not the leadership role that France can take, but it could be a catalyzer between the United States and Russia, usefully.
And that's why, of course, Lyndon LaRouche has been emphatically emphasizing the importance of the four power agreement with Europe in a secondary position.
Yeah. Because Europe has hands tied by the Maastricht Treaty and the Stability Pact, things that forbid the issuance of credit, productive credit. I wrote a report for the National Assembly 12 years ago on this issue, public productive credit. And I said in this report it was for a group of deputies, that it should be reestablished. And it was never reestablished, and that's the issue.
Yeah. Now, Jacques, I want to, because I know you well, and I know that for you, you have the same mental approach that Lyndon LaRouche does, where you look at things through many, many centuries of history. And it's interesting to me when you talk about this current situation where Gordon Brown is trying now to identify Sarkozy's proposal with his proposal and say this is a European proposal. And then, of course, there's a fight in Russia over whether to ally with the United States or not. And we had the very interesting exchange this week, the statement from Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, saying that we need the United States of Franklin Roosevelt and John Kennedy. And Lynn had a reply to that, which is very interesting, and that's also up on our website. But here's my question for you.
And also Lavrov said that the United States, that the relations between Russia and Great Britain are frozen but that the United States is not Great Britain.
Yes, and that was extremely important. Well, that gets to my question. The relationship between France and Great Britain has not always been a good one. In fact, going back to the Shakespearean plays of the English king, you see a long periods of enmity, hostility, conflicting interests. To what extent do the French today, and by the French I mean the leading political networks of all parties that you talk to what extent are they clear on this question of the Anglo-Dutch Empire as the force behind the current globalization and the ones that would do anything to stop LaRouche's New Bretton Woods?
They have a problem. The left-wing people have a type of problem similar to that of the Russians, a kind of Marxian view that they would see the United States, Wall Street, as the enemy, and they would tend to block a bit again on the City of London issue. So now this is changing. For example, you have French Socialist Deputy Montebourg, that in the past I did not trust too much, and I don't trust too much his judgment now. But he said one thing very useful. He attacked tax havens on French television. And he said the tax havens are, for example, he said, the Anglo-Norman Islands, the Cayman Islands, and the City of London. And the guy said, the City of London, the tax haven? He said, yes, that's one of the worst. So this thing is on the table. It's discussed in France at this point, even from people that I would not trust personally and that don't think much of me of, and don't want to meet the LaRouche people. So you have this thing in a relatively how the process of things in history, especially in Europe, is a principle of confrontation between, especially in France, between an oligarchical principle and a republican principle. And sometimes it's in the mind of the same person. You look at Sarkozy today. Well, a few months ago, he was visiting England, and he announced to the British Parliament that the French troops were going to be deployed more into Afghanistan. He announced that to the British Parliament, not to the French Parliament. And there was anger in France against that. The army was furious. You have a military factor. These people in the army were furious against Sarkozy, especially when people were killed in Afghanistan because they had not the proper equipment. So you have that. And Sarkozy even said at the time, and that is a few months ago, that, you know, he told a few people, I'm going to be in England and I'm going to sleep with Carla at Buckingham Palace. That's my dream. So you have that aspect, and then you have the other aspect, which is all of a sudden something of a different principle. So that's what I was saying. These Republican and these oligarchical principles are in the mind of the same people. And I would not trust Sarkozy without putting pressure on him.
Right.
A lot of pressure. He needs this pressure.
You have that same kind of split personality on France's relationship with the developing sector. For example, France was a colonial power, including after World War II, where the colony...
was an empire.
Yeah, an empire.
An empire.
And yet that seemed to change with somewhat unexpectedly with the presidency of Charles de Gaulle. To what extent today is there a kind of relationship that the French have? You mentioned the French with Russia. What about China, India, Africa? Can France play a role in the development projects that we're talking about?
France is very close to Brazil at this point on military affairs and on the nuclear program. And that's the nuclear aspect in France, which is extremely important. France is probably at this point with Russia, the most advanced country in the nuclear programs. They have to go for the HTR, for the high-temperature reactor. They have all the plans, but they have not moved for that. Nonetheless, Sarkozy went to Libya, he went to Algeria, he went to Egypt, and he offered French nuclear energy for the development of those countries. And also, there is a connection between Areva and the United States in terms of a nuclear program. So you have all this nuclear issue, which is extremely important, and on the other side, you have at the same time a connection of the French Secret Services and the American Secret Services, which is historical. It dates back from World War II. And sometimes it's for the best, sometimes it's not so good, especially the arrangements around the French connection and the, all the drug policies of services in France and the United States. So this is one thing. The other thing is a positive aspect. The people that Lynn mentions as people who respect him in these services, who are in connection with other people in France. So, but until now, this thing they would hide because they were afraid to be too much exposed in a relation with the United States. That was in part what happened during the Mitterrand and Chirac presidencies, and because Bush was in power and so on and so forth, and because Mitterrand was very close to the British. You can call him a British agent of influence in a way, with a Wilson type of British agent of influence. So you have all this tricky situation here, and if somebody like de Gaulle or a person of character would be a person like Lynn, would push things, the thing would tend to go in the right direction. If not, it would tend to go in the wrong direction. It's like good and evil. If there is good, evil doesn't come. If good stops to develop, then evil appears. It's a bit like that, the situation in France.
And Jacques, then just to get back to one of the points you were making, you said that Sarkozy can play a role, but he needs to have pressure from the United States. When you say that...
And from France, too. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, so you're doing that in France, and I have a question for you in a moment about the LaRouche youth movement in France.
Uh-huh.
But in the U.S., what is it that can be done to increase the pressure? I mean, obviously, people listening to this program should be supporting LaRouche and making sure that it's LaRouche's new Bretton Woods which comes out. What else? Is there anything else you can see in terms of U.S. policy that would have the effect on France that would cause it to support this four-power approach to the new Bretton Woods?
Probably the right revival of the nuclear policy, of the nuclear program, and the space policy, because nuclear and space policy would be the area of cooperation between the United States and Russia, with France that can play a role, because France, under De Gaulle, and till then have still a certain position in terms of the space program, and in particular in the nuclear program. So that will be very important to have a type of program for the third world and the development of Africa. I issued a paper on a Lake Chad development for the Central Africa. It would not cost so much on top of everything else, but it's needed as a kind of lung of freshness for Central Africa, to make the desert
to make it bloom.
Yeah, to make it bloom and to create a new factor of between four or five countries, including Nigeria and the French-speaking countries in the center of Africa. So this community of intention in a development project for Africa should be also the second thing, and I think it will be a very important thing for an Afro-American population in the United States that seems to me today a bit disoriented by the Obama candidacy.
Well, that's actually a very interesting point, because that does get right into the whole question that with the nuclear, with the space, not just of having development projects, but of optimism, because you think back to the Kennedy administration and the optimism of the U.S. space program. I was watching some financial commentators last night on one of these news channels, and they were very demoralized. They said the era of the U.S. power internationally is gone. They were saying that there's going to be years of suffering, and people are going to have to scale way back on the American dream. But I know Lyndon LaRouche thinks differently, and I know that you think differently. What would give people a sense of optimism today? Because what you pointed out is there's a lot of uncertainty. No one's sure what Sarkozy will do. Will Bush understand anything that he says? Are there people in the United States that can overpower the control of Wall Street? Where do you find the optimism, Jacques, when you look at the world?
I find the optimism in what the youth movement, the LaRouche youth movement, is doing, and also in the dishes that history is bringing to us at this moment. And we have to be very alert and very prompt in seizing the dishes while the history passes around. And it will be a very short period of time. And we have to be extremely alert. Sometimes we are not, even ourselves, alert enough to the opportunity given by this historical moment. The Chinese have a sign, have a character, which says at the same time, it's a character meaning crisis, it means great danger and great opportunity. And a great danger can become a great opportunity, and it depends on what people believe about themselves. People have to be given back the appreciation of themselves, what in French is called l'estime de soi, that they believe that themselves could act and intervene in politics and change the issues. At this point in France, a lot of people think that the issues are defined way beyond France and that they can't intervene because it's too far from them. And we have to bring them the idea that it's near them, and if they intervene in the issues linking international policies, national policies, and regional local policies, then it changes things. And that's what I insist a lot here, saying that's why LaRouche in the United States is saying that the regional and local banks, the chartered banks, should be protected when they intervene in the development of the communities. And this should be understood. We are not against the banks as such. We are against the casino banks and against this, what they called in French, the tripot, which is even worse than a casino. It's where all kind of dirty things happen, which is now the international financial system. But we defend the banks who are helping the citizen to develop his spirit of development, enterprise, spirit of change and improvement.
Well, that's in fact what a republic is, that you have a republic where you have institutions of self-government which only function if the citizens are involved in the functioning of the government.
Here we are repeating to people, Hamilton, Hamilton, Hamilton. And these people are looking into Hamilton, they are looking into Matthew Carey, they are looking into Henry Carey, they are looking into Pershing Smith in Japan, and you have a French character called Paul Cowes, who was involved with that group and would teach in the law school in France this type of policy. So some of that is still around. He attacked the socio-biological British economic policy, and he said this is what should be dumped. So this guy was at the end of the 19th century, and now I rediscover him, and I make certain people reread him, and they see the bridge between what happened in France and Liszt, Carey, the Careys, and Lincoln and Roosevelt. Roosevelt is very interesting because one of the best friends of Roosevelt was a socialist in France, Léon Blum. And Blum wrote a letter to Roosevelt in 1942 telling him, don't listen to certain people around you or to certain people around Winston Churchill. De Gaulle represents, you like it or not, De Gaulle represents the spirit of France. He is the embodiment of France at this point. And I think that at that point, in a very conflictual situation, but still, De Gaulle had a problem with the empire, and Roosevelt had a policy which was to maintain an ambassador to Vichy, so there was a kind of conflict. But after the war, just before Roosevelt's death, when De Gaulle came to New York, this conflict was in a process of being solved, and De Gaulle wrote things about him. Everybody says De Gaulle and Roosevelt were enemies, they were against each other. If you look at the end of the war, you see an evolution on both sides. And this would have been very interesting if Roosevelt had lived longer and De Gaulle had stayed in power. The world could have been changed right there.
That is very interesting. I wasn't aware that Léon Blum, who had been the socialist prime minister of France, or president of France in the mid-30s, right?
He was president of the council in the 30s on the Pop Front. That's also interesting. He wanted to have to develop in France the policies of Roosevelt in the United States. And he could not do it because French banks associated with British banks blocked him from doing that.
Right. Now, Paul, you just recently set up a chapter at the University of Texas, which I understand the main focus is on studying Henry Carey. You want to give a quick report on that?
Yeah, sure. The general tenor is that there are a lot of serious students out there. The University of Texas is one of them. And these students are finding that the policies of free trade and globalization have been pushed to the extreme and no longer work. And to them, it's very obvious. So they're looking around for answers to these things, answers to what they're going to do with their future, how they're going to build up a career or a life or whatever in light of everything that's going on, which is not supposed to happen. So actually, as a result of this hurricane we had here in Houston about a month or two ago, we spent a little more time up there in Austin, and so met a lot of these guys and got things going right away and have begun to delve into Henry Carey's political economy. Now, the process at the moment is we're just sort of shaking off all the bad habits of Greenspan and free trade or monetarism generally. See, one of several problems is that most people here don't have an orientation towards farming or production. So some of this stuff is a little bit distant, but what you find is you jump right into it, and the history of the development of the United States overlaps very closely with what Henry Carey is laying out. And then beyond that, as you get further into it, he develops for you a comparison to what was going on in France, in England, in Poland, as far as wages and economic development of the average person before the introduction of science and technology in the United States. So it's very exhaustive work, and we've only just begun. So
good.
And these are the kind of ideas, and Jacques, you might mention to our good friend Christine, who I believe is a graduate of the University of Texas, that there are now Carey students studying Carey in her alma mater. So we have about 5 minutes left, Jacques, and I want to get back to the basic topic which we started with, which is the potential for a new Bretton Woods. Now, just again, if we don't get a new Bretton Woods, or if Brown and Greenspan, Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of Britain, Greenspan, Henry Paulson and others, succeed in preventing a LaRouche-oriented New Bretton Woods and instead impose a corporatist structure defending the derivatives, the speculative system, and the banks, what will be the effect of that? How long will this bailout process seem to keep things holding together?
There will be chaos. Immediately there will be chaos, and then police state measures. And then we're going towards one thing that I called during my presidential campaign here in 2006 and 2007, the blackmail of a fascist financial regime. So that's our noses are just before that. It's there. It's in the works. For example, the European Council decided tough policies against immigration at the same time that they decided to support Sarkozy in his new Bretton Woods approach. So you have this contradiction, and a good world to live tomorrow would be a world which is defined by the same principles as the LaRouche Youth Movement in the United States, in Germany, in France, in Ibero-America, throughout the world, which is a principle of discovery, the principle of creativity. And what creates optimism is when you can socially share this principle of creativity. And that's the basis of the LaRouche Youth Movement here. And they are discovering Kepler, Gauss, and now Riemann, like in the United States. But also they are discovering things that happen in French history, like the French Academy of Sciences, Fermat, Pascal, what Leibniz was doing in France. They are rediscovering all these parts of history that were thrown behind the scenes. And to bring them to light is what gives people optimism and here a sense of the nation. It's not only Louis XIV, it's not only the rotten regimes of the Third Republic, it's not only what happened since De Gaulle left, it's something else, which is the spirit of the nation. And this is very, very, very important, because it's always associated here with the spirit of America, which is that everybody, even those who are not aware of it, have in the mind a sense of the future, with in that form is a sense of America, a sense of a world where you can accomplish things without being prevented by the prevailing rules of the oligarchy. So they see the United States today and they said, no, this is not America. We want to bring America back.
And I know from the time I spent with you in France that many of the people from the period of De Gaulle and the institutions you're talking about see Lyndon LaRouche as the embodiment of that American spirit of the Franklin Roosevelt tradition.
Well, I had a discussion with a French ambassador who is now very old, and he was ambassador of France to the United Nations. And in that time, which was at the end of the 20th century, EIR was circulating in the French ambassador's office and throughout in the United Nations. And he told me, I did that because of LaRouche's courageous position on the Rwanda question, but mainly because he was, for me, the only true representative of the American system against the British system. So there is an awareness of that in France.
Well, and that's important because at this point in time, we cannot depend, as you've so eloquently explained to us, we cannot depend on the goodwill of President Sarkozy.
No.
It's going to depend on an ability to build a movement in the United States and in France, as well as around the world, around those ideas of LaRouche. Jacques, we have about a minute. Do you have any final...
The youth movement. The French youth movement and the American youth movement should speak more to each other. That's what I would say. Because they have a community of principles, a community of ideas, and if they would work together, it would have very good effect. It's the same with the German youth. We have now five Frenchmen in Essen, in Germany, and they are doing very, very well together with the Germans. And they discover that there is a community of principle in this youth against, I would say, the boomer way or the 68ers way to see the world, which is a pessimistic way. Now we are raising this principle of optimism and hope,
And this is what makes the youth movement alive and so powerful.
And the youthful enthusiasm of leaders such as Lyndon LaRouche and yourself are also indispensable in this period. Jacques,
well,
thank you.
We have in our website something that we issued on my campaign in 95 and today. So I said, look at what I said in 95, but I have no vanity to have said it because I had to work a lot, and these things were told to me in discussions with Lyndon LaRouche. So it's very clearly positioned in France, and this thing in 2 days got 4,000 visits.
And Jacques, give us the website where people would go to find the LIM website in France.
Oh, it's www.solidaritéetprogrès, without any accent. It's SOLIDARITE and ETPROGRES, Solidarité et Progrès, Solidarity and Progress, Solidarité et Progrès in one word, .org.
Okay, so Jacques, thank you very much for joining us. I know you had to,
thank you very much to you.
You had to fight with Paris
all of
traffic.
You. My heart is with all of you.
Okay, Jacques, thank you. And
bye-bye.
Thank you, Paul. And join us next week for another program on The LaRouche Show.
And I hope to see Paul in France at some point. Or in the United States.
You may even see me.
Very good.
Very good.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.